The economy is gradually improving. Interest rates are coming down. It's a more certain year. We have a government of national unity that seems to be working more or less. I'm hopeful. Am I being stupid?
Well, we've made it through quite a lot of new filters of things we've never tried before. So that would be grounds for some confidence about the future.
Mark, hello. How are you? Good morning.
Welcome to 2025. It's a fabulous number, 2025, by the way. It's a perfect square. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a square. It's a perfect square. It's 45 squared, as it so turns out. Okay.
Okay.
Which is a pretty unique number. The last time that happened, I think, was in 1936, which was like, I don't know, what was it, 89 years ago or something.
Right.
And the next time it's going to happen is in 91 years' time. So there are very few people that have more than one.
Right.
And I don't think we're going to have another one. Okay. it's also the sum of two squares and the product of two squares and the sum of three squares. And it's a pretty cool number. So let's hope it's a pretty cool year. I think we've got an exciting whole lot of control alternate deletes, including the new president of the United States. There's a whole lot of new stuff too, man. There's a whole lot of new people in charge, new influence. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an exciting year. I did some research for my blog on uncertainty.
Mm.
And you won't believe this, but in fact, uncertainty is increasing.
No, I'm not sure about that.
No, you can tell because there's a whole bunch of measures. I didn't actually know this, but there are a whole bunch of studies which go out and try and work out how much uncertainty there is in the world.
Right.
The studies all seem to show that people are getting more and more uncertain. That things are getting more uncertain. And, you know, you can sort of tell, I mean, instinctively, you know this, right?
Yeah.
We live in a kind of polyamorous world or poly-crisis situation where there are several balls sort of floating around in the air simultaneously, and that just makes it much more complicated.
The only thing you can be certain about is that there's more uncertainty too.
Yeah, and what do you do if you're uncertain, Mark? What is your solution to uncertainty?
You know, there's the ostrich approach, which never fails. You know, just ignore it and kind of hope that it goes away. Okay, I mean, you know, who needs all these choices and things? You know, there's only one thing worse for you than sugar,
right?
And that's anxiety.
Okay.
I've decided that anxiety is the worst food you could live on, no matter what.
Right.
Okay, and so all of this uncertainty, I think you have to start to get it even vaguely manageable. You have to divide it into things you can do something about,
right,
and things you can't do anything about. Yes. And the ones you can't do anything about, don't worry. Okay? Just don't worry. Okay, and the ones that you can do something about. Don't procrastinate. Right. Just don't procrastinate. Now, Tim, let me tell you that would be my advice. In practice, what I do in these circumstances is eat a full bar of chocolate.
Okay. That seems very sensible at any point.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what advice you would give me, but there is uncertainty. And it's kind of funny in a way because there's more information. And there's certainty. There's much more immediately available at your fingertips information, and yet there's more uncertainty. Can you reconcile those two observations?
Well, maybe they're linked. Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah,
one of the aspects of uncertainty that I was looking at was whether or not economists are predicting, you know, the base aspects of, you know, the global economy correctly or not, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, at the beginning of the year, economists are paid to make predictions about what is going to happen, right, in the following year. Now, this is not a great job.
Yeah, bless them.
This is hard.
And there's no upside.
No, exactly. But anyway, in America, one of the regional feds actually does a survey every year, which is a well-known survey, and it's called the Blue Chip Survey of Professional Forecasters.
Right, right.
And they've been doing it for 20 years.
Right.
So the question is, in those 20 years, you know, how many times did the majority of forecasters, you know, get it right to a, you know?
It's half the time.
Exactly. Precisely. Yeah. In other words, you could flip a coin.
Yeah, 100%. I tell you the most fascinating thing about flipping a coin in terms of just making decisions. Okay.
Right.
If you're kind of 50-50 on something, you don't know really which way you'd go.
Right.
Flip a coin.
Right.
And while it's in the air,
yes,
you'll develop a bias for which way you'd prefer it to fall.
Okay.
You just will.
Well.
You will. You'll flip it and you go, okay, I go up and heads, up and heads. And then you know which one you prefer. Because because why? You've got a timetable. You've got a finite time to make a decision then, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so you'll work out which one you prefer while it's in the air. But yeah, I mean, I think forecasting is a mug's game in today's world.
Do you think this advice is good advice about uncertainty, right? That you should embrace change, should embrace the idea of change?
You absolutely should. But it absolutely isn't as simple as it sounds.
Yes.
If you unilaterally or without reserve, should I say, embrace all change, then you're a nothing. Okay. Then you are but a floating leaf in the breeze, if you will. Okay. So, you know, where do you come down on having things that you're pretty firm about as principles or axioms that drive your life and the way you behave and what you believe in and so on? And being susceptible to change or willing to embrace change. I don't know.
It does seem like it sort of could be a good idea. But anyway, what are you hoping for this year? I mean, do you think, just on the question of, you know, forecasting, I mean, I'm obviously hoping for a better year than last year. Not that last year was the most terrible year in history, but I do think things are looking up for South Africa. The economy's gradually improving. Interest rates are coming down. There's sort of lots of events taking place. It's a more certain year. We have a government of national unity that seems to be working more or less. I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Am I being stupid? Should I just embrace the possibility of failure?
Yeah, we made it through quite a lot of new tests of uncertainty or new filters of things we've never tried before kind of thing. So that would be grounds for some confidence about the future.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that, you know, because it's inflation coming down and interest, the markets sort of are universally continuing upwards, but so is the price of gold. Okay. The price of gold is going up to counter for uncertainty. And so there, you know, I don't know that there's a rule anymore. I think there's a current circumstance that you have to factor into your preferred actions, and that gives you a subset of possible outcomes. And you have to kind of, I think, deal with spaces rather than points.
Yes, that's a very nice idea. Yeah. It's sort of like scenario planning in a way.
Yeah.
You've got a scenario plan. You might not know what will happen, but you might know that it's either going to be this or that.
Yeah.
So either Donald Trump is going to win or he's not.
Yeah.
And you can scenario plan for each of those different possibilities so that when it happens, it's easier. So you can take uncertainty and make it certain in a sense.
So I'd like to define the road on which I'd like to walk in the middle of.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, I think it's the same as what you're saying. Have some boundaries that you don't want to have to deal with, okay, on both sides of any discussion. You know, I don't want to go bankrupt. I'm not prepared to risk everything in the hope of making a massive fortune and losing it all, you know, and so on and so on. And so I think, you know, walking down, as you get older, particularly, walking down an acceptably bounded set of outcomes is more peaceful than testing all the boundaries of possibility. And I think that that's where I find myself wanting to tend in terms of health, lifestyle, financial advice, and everything else.
Okay.
I want peace, man. The quest for life, I've decided, Tim, and this is how boring I am at the beginning of the year, is the quest for enough. I'm out there looking for enough. Have you found enough, Tim?
Oh, plenty. Yeah.
Have you got enough? Have you? I'm not talking money or anything in isolation. Have you found a place which you can call enough? Because that's nirvana. It doesn't get better than that.
Yes. All righty. And then there is also security, because security is part of the imponderable of the year.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, Mark, how many security guards you have for yourself? I mean, what do you...
Including the next one I hire?
Right.
Zero.
So, you know, obviously we're referring to the fact that it turns out that a, you know, court case happened early in the new year, discovered that the Johannesburg mayor's decision to have 10 personal bodyguards was too much. And spending 2 billion rand a year on security is too much.
he denied all of this in an interview yesterday on ESA, by the way. He was interviewed and he said, this is all nonsense. There are only two cars, one of them, the BMW 3 Series, the one series, this, and there's only six people and they're three at a time on rotation. So he threw cold water on the facts as he was presented them, but the concept doesn't change. How much protection do we now? I think key civil servants or key people in government do need to have some protection from whatever, you know, attack they might suffer, or, you know, because they need to be able to confidently express objective viewpoints which might annoy, you know, or cause harm to them by people who object. I don't know. So I'm therefore having some protection for political figures, but well within reason. I don't know. Do you come down on having no escorts and no shortcuts and no protection?
I mean, I see the point, obviously. But, you know, there's lots of people who've got, you know, sort of controversial opinions and have to, you know, speak honestly.
I mean, take you and me, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. I do think it's situational. If you were just an ordinary mayor doing ordinary stuff, there are billionaires that, you know, walk around Johannesburg and do their own shopping. You know, I mean...
Yeah, I've seen some. Yeah.
The thing that I really don't like, and I mean, nobody likes this, is, you know, the taking advantage of your position and saying, okay, let's just gallop through all of these robots and everybody puts their sirens on and they make way for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm the most important.
I think there's got to be balance. I do accept the notion that if the president needs to get to a meeting in Pretoria, that he might be excused not having to sit in a traffic jam or whatever. There's a balance between, you know, practical protection of the individual and, you know, enhanced ability to do their job and showing off and being just ostentatious and rude and unbecoming.
But you know what I love about this incident, though, is that a whole bunch of the political parties have now said, yes, the court ruling was totally right, including Build One South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, and they are part of the Joburg government.
100%. 100%. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I was at a position in government where I was offered a driver, and I just didn't, I didn't take that. But that's a slightly different category. That's a convenience, if you will. And so I imagine, you know, it's like a perk, I suppose. Yeah, I know very important people that have got absolutely no bodyguards. And I'm tempted to have a higher regard for them than the others.
Yeah, that's right. Let's move on. What are you, from a kind of numerical point of view, apart from perfect squares, what are you thinking about?
No, I've got numbers there. I mean, I sit in awe of this Parker solar probe that went to the sun.
Okay.
So now the sun's a long way away. Okay. It turns out it's about 150 million miles away. Okay. I mean, you know, which is quite a long way, or kilometers away. It's a long way. Okay.
Right.
But this probe was traveling quite fast. Okay. It was traveling at 700,000 kilometers an hour, which is quite fast. Okay. And the reason it had to travel that fast is because it went within scorching distance of the sun. And scorching distance of the sun, I think, is 3.8 million kilometers or something. You can get a mud of a suntan when you get that close to the sun. Okay, and it survived. And so what I'm completely foxed about is how there's this thing that's gone to the sun, and I don't know how long it took to get there, but that we are in contact with it, that we know what it's doing, that we can... You know, I'm impressed with cell phones, so it's kind of easy for me. But it's kind of difficult to go, like, we're in touch with something 150 million miles away. Kilometers, I'm not going to be fact-checked on this.
Right.
That's the one thing. And then perhaps an even more fascinating thing is that they weren't drinking that much tequila in Mexico this season.
Okay.
Do you know how I know that?
No.
Because they've declared that they've got a 500 million litre excess of tequila.
Wow.
Okay. Now,
oh my God.
I don't know if that stuff goes off, but you could have one in the pot to try and rid the world of that serpent. But I'll tell you my real number for the year. My real number for the year is 850. Do you know what 850 is?
It's 800 and then you add 50.
No wonder you did well at school. No. But let me tell you what it really
yes,
is.
Yes, no, I know. It's just crazy.
850 is the maximum you can get on a credit score.
Oh, really? Okay.
In the US. Right. So now it's become kind of a social challenge. You know, like you go to a dinner at the in a new neighborhood, they don't check what car you arrived in. They ask you what your credit score is, okay? And so people are trying to change their behavior. I saw this, I think, in the FT, to try and get the perfect credit score. Now, I've got a couple of challenges around being able to get a credit score online and then using that to borrow money.
Right. Okay?
Because that's its purpose in life.
Right.
We are all being encouraged into far more debt than is sensible for us to bear.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it's January month, okay?
Yes.
And everyone's credit card is full and everyone's bank account is empty. Okay. And so it's cuck. Okay. Yes. It's not lekker. Okay. Until the 25th of January, we're on bread foot. Okay.
I mean,
hey, what do you think of credit?
I think it's a nice idea. I think we should have an open access to your credit score. I mean, I think it'd be fascinating. I mean, I can tell you what mine is, for example. I mean, I'm quite open about it.
Yeah.
And mine is, you know, 849. But listen, I'm not bragging.
No, you're right.
But I'm prepared to be public.
No, but that's because you don't borrow any money, right? So you don't count. I mean, we're talking about people who have credit scores because they want to borrow money. Okay.
Yeah. Can I make a comment about your previous topic about the tequila?
Yes.
Because actually, I had a number two, which also involves booze, because we've just had, you know, sort of New Year parties and all of that sort of stuff.
That time of year. Yeah.
So now the question is, compared to people who lived in 1970, so that's, you know, basically 50 years ago, by how much has wine drinking in France declined?
Per capita or something?
No, the sort of total amount of wine produced was X, and it's declined since then. We know this. But what I thought was incredible was that it has declined by 90%.
Wow, I would never have guessed
that. It's just amazing. The new generations, the people younger than us, you know, they're just more abstemious than
I don't think it's got anything to do with abstention.
Okay.
I think it's got to do with two things.
Right.
I think it's got to do with substitution.
Right.
I don't think people have the time or inclination to sit around sipping wine for the very taste and, you know, and larniness of it. Hey, I think they're quicker, cheaper ways to kind of get the party going.
Right.
And B, I don't think wine as a business pays that well.
Right.
Okay. Given investment alternatives. So I think the good old days when you had old money growing old grapevines, making new wine.
Right.
Of kind of being counted as these estates start passing, changing hands. Okay.
Okay.
And the next generation wants a better return on investment. I'm making this up, Tim, but I can understand why it's declined. I didn't think 90%. If it's declined 90% in France, it must be declining more in the rest of the world.
No, I think France is an indicator here because wine drinking in France was always very high. So it is a bit of a sort of standout.
Yeah,
but there is corroborating, you know, evidence if you want
evidence to suggest. And, yeah, can we help, Tim? Can we bring the number back up again?
yes. The number of arrests, for example. I mean, I read this fantastically funny article in The Economist about why people over the age of 55 are the new problem generation.
Oh, I saw that somewhere. What does it say?
The number of people arrested who are over 55. Has doubled in the past decade. It's incredible.
Because we're still living it up, man. You know, we are the oaks that dance with that. We the game, okay?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, all these youngsters don't know what they're doing and all these oldies don't care. So that's how it is. We're going to keep going. I'm in that group. I'm above 55 and plus that. Okay.
Yes. Not stopping the drinking.
No.
And the rock and roll and the sex, maybe not so much. But
you can't. Tim, there's a golden rule over 55. You can't stop living to live longer. Okay. But that's the rule.
Yes.
Okay. That's the rule. But there's lots of change of influence. I mean, just I see Elon Musk is getting involved in the Reform Party in the UK, wanting to replace Farage. And it seems like political influence is a moving feast around the world. It's all changing.
It amazes me how much some people just get absorbed by politics. That just grabs them and takes them. And
not me so much.
Because, you know, 3 years ago, Elon Musk was almost completely apolitical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't be able to guess who he voted for, who he didn't. Now, he's supported the right-wing party in Germany. He's called for the Farage directive to be replaced. And Farage likes him. I mean, Farage has written complimentary things about him for, you know, a decade. Yeah. Kind of heartless.
Has he popped out of the top of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, basically? He's burst that bubble completely. Exactly. Okay, so he's in a new dimension. Yeah. And in that dimension, money eventually, the marginal utility of money is obviously zero. But the marginal utility of power is kind of infinite. And so he's onto a new currency, a new life currency. It's called power. Power is the new game, Tim. 2025, watch out. Here we come.
Okay. Here comes the power.
Here comes the power. That'll probably do for a start. I mean, we had a nice break.
I know.
We should have more breaks, Tim.
I know, exactly. Mark, look after yourself. We'll talk again next week.
Yeah, you too. Okay, cheers, man.